Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 8:33 Central African time, at the time of the morning where we join our very own Member of Parliament, Ahmed Mansoor Sheikh Imam, the leader of the NFP. Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah. Indeed, a mashallah, beautiful day on the city of Durban, no doubt about it. I wish I could say the same about the city itself. But beautiful beach, and there's quite a bit of people already enjoying the ocean, the beautiful Indian Ocean. Yeah, well, that's the state of Durban. But I can tell you that more and more people in Durban are raising concerns about the state of Itegwini or Durban itself. And measures are being put in place to do something about it. So I think running to the elections, you're going to expect a very hostile environment in Durban. A lot of protest action is going to take place, abuse, insults, attacks, so a whole lot is going to actually happen. But be that as it may, yesterday I attended the FINSA, First Indigenous Nation of South Africa, the Khoi and San community, the Aboriginal people. They are bringing an equality court claim against government. For all Khoi and San people, they are claiming about 4.5 million rand per person, Khoi and San member in South Africa, for the neglect, the marginalization and things that they have suffered all these years, and the fact that, you know, there's been no restitution, compensation or anything for them. If you note that the United States Supreme Court granted judgment there for the indigenous people, Canada has as well. So, quite a large, about 800 people attended, the one in Newlands East. There's another one today, and then in two different areas. They're moving to the length and breadth of the country. I think they are now about 40 to 50,000 strong members that have lodged claims. Okay, and the deadline for that is in October, but they have lodged the case with the High Court. That's one of the things. Now, the Jacob Zuma, gone to Russia. Russia and healthcare, all our people seem to be going to Russia. I don't know whether they go there with, just to see what happens, whether they need to come back or not, or whether this is a hiding place or so. But more importantly, many people seem to be going there, the pretext that they're going for healthcare. But, you know, the strange thing about this, can you imagine Julius Malema going into public and saying that he's had meetings with President Cyril Ramaphosa, influencing, in other words, him, discussing how you could keep Jacob Zuma out of prison. Is that not the height of corruption, if you go and discuss things, interfere in the criminal justice system? And he seems to be proud of it. I cannot understand that. So if that is what he's doing, can you imagine how much more is happening on the ground as far as corrupt and corrupt activities? But anyway, SABC, English football. Now you can watch your Manchester United with no problem at all. You don't need a DSTV. Perhaps they're encouraging you to pay your TV license. That's just one of the issues that has been done. Now, Germany and many other countries, Germany, Ireland, and many others are wanting South Africans, the South African skills. South Africa can't accommodate them here. As such, these countries need the skills, and they are planning to take them away. So can you imagine, particularly in the health sector, we have a massive shortage of staff in nursing staff, in professionals in the healthcare sector in South Africa. And we're losing a lot of them because of the lack of a budget that the department is not able to accommodate them. So when you're going to lose them, even if you're going to have the budget eventually, I can tell you now you're going to have a serious problem in that you're not going to find them when you need them. So, you know, this matter has been raised time and time again, Bernier, with the department, with government as well, with the number, the amount of skills that we're losing. And the skills we're losing is just not the skills. These make up the 15% taxpayers in the country. That's the other problem that we tend to be having. So, in other words, your revenue will also drop as far as that is concerned as well. Well, the South African police services have made arrests. There's 4 arrests so far with this trucking sabotage that has been taking place. They're not ruling out any links to any particular individual or an attempt to try and destabilize the country thus far. But apparently, it seems to have something to do with these coal contracts and things. So, in other words, these criminals that have been enjoying themselves now are fighting among themselves. Comes back to what they say, there's no honor amongst thieves. So that's where you're having another problem. Yeah, these are just some of the things that are making headline. I think we have discussed previously on the issue of allegations against the deputy president and many other ANC leaders. But yes, there's a whole lot that's going on in the country. Russia and BRICS, we know that there's been discussion between our president and Putin on grain and things, but no real confirmation whether he's actually going to pitch up here. Israelis continue to protest against this judicial overhaul there. Yeah, these are just some of the things making lines.
Yeah, once you're giving your thoughts here, I see there's a message for you, and it's Farhan. He says, "Assalamu alaikum. I'm really enjoying the show, Brother Sheikh. Keep it up." Question for Member of Parliament Ahmed Manzoor. Ahmed, I want to know, there are these different groupings of Zulu, Sotho's, Khoisans, etc., etc. I want to know how they vote. The Zulus, if they all voted for a Zulu leader, then there will be a Zulu president. Or is it the Khoisans that are more than the Zulus? I don't know. Please inform, because it seems as if Julius Malema is playing a game of emotional sentiment. He's trying to be a good pal of Jay-Z so that the Zulus will vote for him. I don't know if he's an Indebele or a Sotho. your response there to Farhan?
I think Brother Farhan is spot on his observations. People vote on tribally, depends on which tribe you belong to. They vote that way. And that is why the Zulu nation particularly, and KwaZulu-Natal for that purpose, will always want a leader of theirs in high places or in influential positions. But that is one of the reasons why President Cyril Ramaphosa is not popular. Now, you can see Julius Malema is playing his cards here. And what he's attempting to do in supporting Jacob Zuma. And he knows deep down that it's not going to happen. If you remember, Brother Shafford, this is the same Julius Malema that made about Jacob Zuma. So he's making another about, and it's one person that is never consistent and can never be trusted with anything he says. And in his own words, he's now telling you, "I'm corrupt because I was trying to intervene in not getting allowing Jacob Zuma to go to prison." He's saying that in his own words. Now, what he's attempting to do at the moment, score points here. He knows that Jacob Zuma comes with quite a massive support. And with the RET faction fighting Cyril Ramaphosa, the only way he believes, and remember, he is from the ANC. Okay, that's where he grew up. But it doesn't matter to him if that baby, the ANC that he grew up, is destroyed. No. If he can benefit out of it, he can destroy the ANC. That's how it is at the moment. So he wants to score points and try and garner the support from this ANC, because he wants the ANC to fight the ANC. So when they break up, they got to go somewhere. So he's trying to create this close relationship with them so that he can try and get that support. You can see he's been trying with Ace Magashule, Jacob Zuma, he's been there. So he knows how to manipulate, if that's the term I should use, people for his own selfish gains. And that is what it is all about right now. So I think Brother Farhan is correct. Unfortunately, a lot of these people, it's the same thing in many other grouping. I can tell you it's very difficult to get the black and the colored community together. They don't like each other. They just don't. And it's but just like that, and South Africa, at some day, I can assure you, will end up into a tribal war. And the Zulus are not going to accept somebody as Xhosa or Ndebele or Sotho or whatever it is. No, they're not going to. So it's a very difficult situation that we are going to head to eventually. And politicians are the ones that's going to use tribe to divide us. As far as Julius Malema is concerned, there's a lot of confusion as to what he really means. Some says he's even Zimbabwean, so I don't know. But one thing I know is that I've just established by speaking to somebody that came to see me last week from Zimbabwe, well, he seems to be quite certain that Julius Malema's got a lot of shares in the mines in Zimbabwe. And this is from the time of his youth presidency in the ANC. So I don't have to tell you where all this is coming from anyway. But Julius Malema, I want to tell you, even if it means he will destroy the ANC, he'll destroy it so that he would have the upper hand and he can call the shots. And that's what it is about at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite frightening, when you hear all these stories are coming through, Ahmed. As we see another message on the screen, he says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Mansoor Sheikh Imam. I want to know the facts here. You said that each Khoi and San member will be getting 4.5 million each from the government if they can prove that they are from the indigenous tribe of the country. But how do you prove that? You talk about the colors, aren't colors a mixture between the Boers and the Africans? Please clarify as to how this money will be paid and the bill will be footed by whom. Ahmed, that's a very deep question. How you answer that?
Yes, Brother Shepherd, no, I didn't say they're going to get 4.5 million. That is what that is what their claims are, 4.5 million rand for each. Remember, this matter will end up in court. It's like it's happened in the United States, where United States court has granted $2 million, and now the government is taking it on appeal. There's compensation paid in Canada and I think in Australia and many other countries for the indigenous people. And that's exactly the same thing. Yes. So we don't know whether what court will eventually grant. Remember, it means, and you know what happens with government when you take them to court, eventually you negotiate. They will fight you till the end, and then they will negotiate and reach some settlement. So if the Khoi and San people do get paid, it will depend on what they agree on or what the court grants. But I tell you, because claims have been lodged through the court, an application has already been made. And they've got, an October deadline in being able to secure all the applications. So whoever is in there with those applications in terms of those claims, if the claim is granted and whatever is granted, then will be entitled to it. Of course, the question is, how do they get paid if that does happen? And if they do agree, court grants judgment or government agrees, then it simply means you'll have to create a trust or whatever it is, but you'll have the applications of every individual application is being done. That's why it's a very laborious task that's taking place at the moment to the length and breadth of the country, where they are going from each area, you know, explaining to the people, and you can see the documents are quite thick, exactly what it is about, what the process is going to be and everything, and explaining to them what will happen if their claims have been accepted and approved and that kind of thing. Yeah, so that's basically the way it is. On the issue of coloreds and the first indigenous nation or the Khoi and San, to a very large extent, if you look at the history of them, from starting whether you talk about the Ngunis who came from, I think, West Africa and where they came from different areas, they had initially associated themselves with the first indigenous nation or the Khoi and the San. And yes, you are correct that to some extent there's been interracial between whites and blacks in South Africa, but to a very large extent it was also with the Khoi and San as well. If you look at the Princess Crotua, the mother of the Khoi and San nation, and who she was in a relationship with and things like that, you will see that a very large percentage of the colored community or so-called colored community, which I'm hoping, which I have sent some correspondence to Parliament to try and remove that from the vocabulary and refer to everybody as South Africans, but rather than calling them colored or other, you can see that it has been rejected with the contempt it deserves abroad, and we need to do likewise in South Africa. You know, even for us, Brother Shepherd, it makes it very difficult when somebody asks you, what are you? What race are you? Now, you don't know what to say because you can say you are Indian. You are Indian from where? India at the moment. But actually, you're not Indian. You're South African. You're born and bred here. This is where you are. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for you to explain. Then you may have to tell people, I'm a Indian born in South Africa. Can you imagine how you have to qualify it? Because now, otherwise, people think you've just been imported from India and that kind of thing. So it makes it very difficult. And there's no doubt about it that the Khoi and San were the first indigenous nation, the first people that way. Everybody else came and found them here. That we cannot argue about in any event. So, yes, that process, people are lodging in their claims at this point in time. But remember, not every colored wants to be a Khoi and San. You know, so people that are not Khoi and San, there might be people that might not be entitled to it. But of course, it depends on the process and what happens when it goes through to court. I know it will end up in court. The application has been made in court. Government is just not going to agree to pay. They're not going to learn from what's happening abroad. And we know government, because it's, you use taxpayers' money to for legal costs, they will drive this thing till the bitter end. We know that. But at the end of the day, we cannot deny the fact that for far too long, the first indigenous nation in this country has been marginalized, very badly neglected. They've lost everything, is gone. Everybody else claims it belongs to them. But these are the people that we found here. And I think it is only time. I mean, we've even now gone to the next language, but still don't recognize the Khoi and San language either. So I think the decision that they've taken, and I can tell you that they've got advice, legal advice, senior counsel, judges have advised them that they're going the right route. And so they've decided to go that route. And but yes, on the issue again, on the, whether somebody is colored or some, I'm not sure what process will unfold to be able to see who actually qualifies or not. But the understanding is this, that most colored people are Khoi and San. The only difficulty is, like I said, some of them don't want to be regarded as Khoi and San. Well, maybe now when there's money involved, they'll all want to be regarded as Khoi and San. But there is a percentage, yes, indeed, that may have been in a relationship with the white, black, the whites took advantage of our maids and housekeepers and whatever it is. We know that. And so you had so-called a colored community. But I don't think it is to a very large number. I think it is the Khoi and San. If you look at the Indian community, we only came in two ships, Brother Shepherd, and look at what we are today. So, yeah, I hope I may have done justice to that question.
Yeah, you know, talking about the same theme, I recall there was this, activity of the UDM, and you know, when the new dispensation came, he, you know, became member of ANC. But he used to call himself Khoi San X. I don't know if you recall him, and he was quite vociferous. But suddenly, you know, when he accepted Islam, he disappeared from the scene. That begs the question: how many of these Khoi and San people are into Islam, Ahmad?
Well, I must tell you, I've met many of them. Even when I went to the NOW, which is what they call a special thing that they normally have, I've met a lot of Muslims. And what the one good thing about FINSA is, you know, they are also bringing the all the people together, and very and they're playing a very pivotal role, I must be honest, in trying to bridge the gap between the Muslims and the non-Muslims. And I've observed that myself. I've met many leaders and that are, even some of them are part of the executive, Brother Ikram in the Western Cape, Brother Shauki from Weinberg in the Western Cape, all these people, Father Scaifes. So I've met a lot of them. So quite a large percentage of them, yes, indeed, are from the Ummah.
Alhamdulillah, you know, that's great to know. And if they're growing there. And, you know, we know this. The only solution for South Africa, I mean, you look at the tribalism and all this going through, is Islam. And alhamdulillah, you know, I don't know if who's going to take them. Maybe we're failing the whole country or the nation here in that we haven't given them Islam and so forth. But another point to make, Ahmad, is I'm looking at a message here from Asif here. He says, Assalamu alaikum. Ahmad, I can't see this country ever uniting unless there is federation. And we do need a federation, because whatever KZN does, when it sneezes, the whole country gets a cold. It's high time that KZN became a separate entity. How do you respond to Asifia, Ahmad?
I think it's a very important point. And I'm in full support of a federal system, to be honest. I am. I believe it is the solution. However, it was something, you know, I know that the ANC at one stage, when they were in full power, wanted to reduce the number of provinces for starters. But when they lost Western Cape, then they found an urgent need to want to do that. But it's still under their discussion. And they wanted to amalgamate the Western Cape with Eastern Cape and others so that they can still have control. But the point I think that the brother is making here is a very important point. The only difficulty is this, that some of the provinces in South Africa are economically better off than others. And that makes it difficult. But I think if you can reduce the number of provinces and have a federal system, I think you'll be giving some level of independence to those federal states when it comes to tax collection, in terms of taking decisions, having their own laws, of course, with ultimately comply with the constitution of the country, for development in their areas. So there's a whole lot of things that can happen, because what is happening right now, and I agree with the brand. If you look at what the protest action in KwaZulu-Natal cost the entire country had to suffer as a result of that. You know, if you look at Eastern Cape, what a beautiful province, but it is so badly managed. So badly managed. And the level of poverty is extremely high. So I think, in fact, you know, I must be honest with you, over and above the federal system, I am one of them that have been very vocal calling for the scrapping of all provinces for starters, because I believe it's a waste of taxpayers' money. If you look at the amount of your revenue that goes towards provinces for administration, that's where all your money is going. And why do you need so many tier government, 3-tier, which is like now almost going to a 4-tier government, including the district level? Why can't you just have a 2-tier government, a national and a district level? So you deliver and put more money in delivering services rather than administration. But yeah, it's about the deployment. We want to employ more of our people so we get more of their votes. It's not about the people on the ground. And people on the ground don't understand that when they do these things, ultimately they're paying the price for it. They don't understand that. So for me, I think first of all, if we, and I can't see them going to the federal system anytime soon. I know the Western Cape has been speaking about it. I must also tell you, the first indigenous nation has also been talking about it as well. You know, they want their autonomy. They want to be on their own. They want their own independent owner. That's what they say. But the question is, if you could give it to the Afrikaner in Orania, then why can't you give anybody else? You know, so that's the point again. I can't see it coming anytime soon. But if it can't come anytime soon, I feel that we should either right now get rid of the provinces or reduce the number of provinces right now, so you will reduce the burden on taxpayers and you'll have more money to deliver and uplift the quality of life of our people, and eventually bring it to a 2-tier government like you have in many other countries. You know, so that's what I think we need to do. There's too much of money going to people that are supposed to be providing administrative stuff, and the question is, with all that you spend there, are you getting value for money? No. So, yes, I would agree the federal system, I think, would be a good system. And in the absence of that, we need to reduce the provinces first. And after reducing them, get rid of provinces. We don't need provincial structure. We need 2-tier government, so all your most of your money can go towards uplifting the lives of our people.
Yeah, you're getting councillors that cannot read and write, and all over the country, some just don't even turn up for council meetings. They just accept the salaries that they're getting, and they're getting increased every year and so forth. And perhaps, you know, the only way of getting to know if you really want a federation. I mean, Western Cape, I'm sure the majority wants that. What do you think with the population of KZN? What will the percentage be? Your estimation, how many percent will want a federation or how many wouldn't, Ahmed?
Brother, I think the more important question is KZN, you know, does it have the capacity, given what is happening? If you look at it at the moment, the state of KwaZulu-Natal, really, do we believe they can be a success story? I don't. I honestly don't believe that they can be a success story. So that's the first problem that we got. But I can tell you that, you know, people are manipulated very easily. So, and I can tell you that with what is going on here at the moment, and if you look at the broader picture, KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm not sure if that's what preempted our brother to ask this question, I can tell you, if you look at the broader picture, the first one that's going to, although we think Western Cape was started this thing, the first one that's going to want to demand its independence and move away from the others, or move into a better, will be KZN. KZN, if they can help it, will want to be an independent state on its own. I'm telling you, this is how it's going to go. That is how bad the situation is. And you can see some of the statements that make, what are the attempts, because if all fails now with what's going on with the ANC, remember the ANC forgets one thing, that by virtue of the fact that they were the only organization that was known or marketed themselves well enough to be to mislead people into believing that they brought about the change in South Africa, when it came from many organizations, you know, all played a pivotal role together. Now, with the ANC doing this, and with the self-destruction that you're finding in the ANC right now, it will tear this country apart, I promise you. It's going to tear the country apart. Because their understanding is, if I don't get what I want, nobody must get it. That's the understanding. That's it. Finish. Doesn't care who suffers in the process. Doesn't matter. So that's the problem we are sitting with. So I think KwaZulu-Natal will be the best one.
No, Alhamdulillah, Ahmed, as usual, brilliant in your, you know, in your viewpoints and whatever you gave us this morning. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. You have a mashallah beautiful morning ahead. Inshallah, we'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.